like in Ireland, where you've just been.
Mm.
Did you drink 20 pints of the black stuff?
And was the black stuff different from the black stuff when you get it anywhere else?
I annoyingly didn't get a single drop of the black stuff.
Really?
Well, I was mostly sort of having to drive from gigs to like the next location or halfway to the next location most of the time. So there's only one night where I stayed in the place I was gigging.
You just stuck to Strongbow.
I stuck to Strongbow. Well, I had a moment of possible sort of social cowardice. It was social cowardice, and also I think the place I was staying, I mean, they did have the black stuff, but the person who ran where I was staying...
We're talking, by the way, for listeners who aren't aware of the lingo...
We're talking about spiced tar.
Spiced tar.
Yeah.
I think I would have done, but he owned the bar, and he was also an Englishman. He invited me after the gig. He said, well, perhaps after your gig you can come and enjoy a pint of creamy, creamy Guinness. And it was just, he'd put too much creamy into the invitation.
He literally said creamy, creamy Guinness.
Creamy,
to you.
Creamy Guinness.
Never say creamy twice. I mean, that's basic. Even cream itself is just cream once, isn't it? The word for cream is just cream.
It got my hackles up, and I did. I like Guinness, and sure, it's creamy, and I would have loved a pint of Guinness, but it rankled with me, and I knew that if I did go, then every single sip I had in that bar of that Guinness, I knew he'd be there, and he'd be staring at me,
maybe even saying or mouthing the word creamy to you.
Possibly whispering the word creamy into my ear all the way through. And every sip, I'd just be hearing him saying creamy, creamy from his wet lips.
Mm. And you'd have to keep on agreeing with him that yes, it is creamy, creamy.
I couldn't.
And at some point in the night, Mike, at some point, he's going to up the ante. He's going to try and add a third creamy in here.
And I'm going to have to put it in first.
These things only go one way.
So it's probably a bit pathetic on my part, but in the end, I couldn't face it. And I just went ahead and had a cup of tea and went to sleep.
It was the only decision you could have made, Mike,
saying
creamy twice like that to a guest. It's not right.
It's not okay.
I felt bad because I had a lovely time. County Wicklow was an awful lot of fun. It was a lovely, lovely gig.
Would you describe the gig as creamy, creamy?
No, the gig wasn't creamy, I'm pleased to say. And I think I'd have found it very difficult if I'd then turned up to the gig and the gig was also creamy. And he was there telling me that it was going to be a creamy gig and talking to me in an interval about wanting to know how creamy I thought it was.
And also what kind of cream. I can't remember if we've talked about this on the podcast or not, but...
Cream, probably.
Yeah, cream.
Cream comes up now and again.
I keep on getting asked in London now when I order a cappuccino.
Which you're doing day to day because you're tapping into the zeitgeist, as we've discussed.
Tapping into I was letting that sink in. Yeah, absolutely love a cappuccino, by the way.
Frothy coffee, you've got to say down these parts. Otherwise,
a frothy coffee.
I don't know what you're talking about.
I mean, a cappuccino is the best, you know, I mean, it's certainly creamy. Mm. But what happens is, now when I order a cappuccino in London, they say, sometimes they go, what kind of milk would you like? Mm. I've probably literally had this conversation.
Oh, yeah, definitely, yeah.
Yeah.
A few times, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
But we're workshopping it.
Exactly. We're circling around. It's slightly different each time, isn't it? So it's interesting. It's like the second half of a Beckett play. Often it's the same, but slightly different. And
and similarly interminable as well.
and with a deep sense of how bleak, you know, existence is, that being really rammed home to the audience as they put their coats on and fuck off.
And you could have been watching Rambo 5.
Could have been watching Rambo 5.
The one that was written by Beckett. People forget that one.
Yeah.
Rambo 5, waiting for Rambo.
Well, his boiler had broken, hadn't it? So he needed a bit of fast cash. So he finally agreed to take the gig.
It's amazing to see it staged, though, isn't it? Because the whole stage is just littered in bullets, a huge pile of bullets, and just one of Rambo's feet is sticking out. Normally his left foot, but that can vary, but you have to discuss it with the Beckett estate because they're very strict about it, but generally his left foot will be sticking out, won't it? And then you'll just hear the words, the pain, the pain, the pain. That's 2 hours, that's the first half.
And is it Stallone's left foot, or does it depend on the performance?
It's Stallone's left foot, yeah.
Yeah.
Apart from when you did it, of course, at the Harrogate
Soon Drive.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah. But generally, it's Stallone's left foot. So Stallone has to be in there, obviously, upside down, suspended in the pile of bullets. But he's able to zoom his family, appear in another film.
Oh, he gets a lot done.
Do a lot from inside lot that. He gets a huge amount done. And he actually says that he sometimes feels like he gets more done than so when he's outside of the pile of bullets moving about.
He does his Christmas thank you letters. He does the works.
He does all that. He's written his newsletters 5 years in advance now, because they're always, I'm still in the pile of bullets. still just working gradually, just interminably working my way through this 20-year run at the National. Which will take me 7 years beyond my expected lifespan.
And the reviews have been dog shit.
But they'll say, what kind of milk do you want in the cappuccino? And then I have to say cow's milk. Mm. And it just feels so weird saying that, because it just feels such a weird thing to want to have on a drink.
Do you know what? This conversation feels like a warm pair of slippers going on.
Are they warm pairs? And you're like, oh, here they go on again. Oh, and I should probably replace them, because, I mean, the one on the left is beyond fungal. It's now literally, I mean, it's its own ecosystem.
It's the one they put on Stallone overnight in the National, isn't it? So his foot doesn't get too chilly.
Have either of you worked in a pub?
Yes, indeed.
I have not, no.
When did you work in a pub?
Me? Oh, many times. Like, sort of student age. Well, basically as soon as I turned 18, really. Had a bunch of barman
get
jobs.
Me out of there. May as well work here.
Exactly.
Right,
yeah.
Of course.
Leapt on it.
But was that a kind of... Because you didn't grow up in the West Country, did you? But I still want to...
I was in a little village outside Portsmouth. And that was one of the little village pubs. That was the first pub job.
Sawdust and hogs across the floor.
Well, there were two bar jobs initially. There was the village pub job, and there was also waiting and a bit of bar work at the local Forte Post House Hotel, which I might have mentioned in the past.
I think so.
Of a little traveller's hotel, sort of on a roundabout, on a major sort of dual carriageway just outside the village.
Trust House Forte.
Yeah. And it was the kind of place where the two chefs were definitely the hairiest people I've ever seen in my entire life. And very much a part of the job was, please make sure you check the plates before you take them out to the punters, because chances are there will be a couple of stragglers on them, and you do need to essentially shave the omelettes before you take them out to the punters.
And it is a hot summer. They are both shedding.
can you gaffer tape a couple of hairnets onto their arms?
Oh, yeah. It's the only waiting job you need to do with sellotape put on backwards, wrapped around both hands at all times, so you could just quickly off it comes. Is it Masaka? Enjoy.
We're hoovering them on the way in. It's not enough. they're waxing every 2 hours. I mean, we've considered just dyeing their hair green and calling it chives. That's literally what we've... That's how bad it's got. That's...
And the food was gross. Even if it was hairless, it was inevitably utterly gross. So, it was, I mean, you'd do an evening there. If you're being a waiter rather than on the bar, you'd expect to, in a shift, have at least six relatively hearty bollockings during the course of the evening.
From customers?
Yeah, very much from very disappointed customers. People, it's the kind of place that people would bring mum for a, you know, 80th or whatever. There was a lot of that going on.
Was it things like, by the time we'd made our way through the hair, that, well, A, that we were all very tired, and B, the lasagna was as cold as the tomb. What kind of complaints was it?
That the food was cold, that the food was hairy, that the food was gross. Utterly...
Cold, hairy, and gross.
Inedibly gross.
And this is a pre-online reviews time, right?
Yeah. So the reviews are very much done on the spur of the moment, IRL, to the nearest minimum wage teenager, which happened to be me or my sister.
You could absorb a lot of that.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So we got quite a heavy-duty early doors education in dealing with the disgruntled, I would say, which has helped me in gigging immensely.
And your audience often are covered in hair, aren't they, by the end of the night? With you, certainly front row.
Well, it just helps that there's something that you can hang your hat on, that, you know, you can explain why it's all gone wrong.
So that thing, Mike, about you working in pubs, that makes sense to me in terms of village life.
Mm.
Because the way I you know, I've always lived in urban spaces.
I mean, you hit 18, you were off to the nearest wine bar, weren't you, presumably?
Exactly, yeah.
You were getting a Cinzano and lemonade and listening to some smooth jazz.
Exactly. That was how I experienced these things. Mm. But my understanding of village life is I have quite occasionally passed through a village. Could have been trapped in a village or snowed in. It does happen.
You've seen some folk horror movies.
I've seen some folk horror movies. Yeah. Sometimes when I'm paragliding from Glyndebourne back to the National, so maybe a matinee of an opera, but try and get back to the National time to watch the evening Shakespeare.
Yeah, sometimes you'll dump the empties from your hamper over a village, won't you?
Exactly. Discarded, theatre programmes. There's mini theatre ice cream bowls.
Yeah, well, our village wasn't under the Glyndebourne flight path, so we weren't lucky enough to get those programmes, unfortunately, but we heard about villages that were, and they sounded wonderful.
No, if Mike's village, you know, got hold of a little thing of ice cream where the spoon was within the lid, it would just blow all their minds.
The spoon is within the lid. It's both a lid and spoon.
I mean, I don't even fully understand what a spoon is, but I'm pretty sure I know what a lid is. It's it's like a cow pat. It's a non-fecal cow pat, I think.
Yeah. Although most of our lids were just fecal cow pats. Chipped away to the right size.
And if you wanted the spoon in the lid, you had to feed the spoon to the cow.
It had to be an indigestible material, and they're very rare and very valuable, so you're loath to do that.
What I understand from village lives is it's quite interchangeable who's working where at any time, because everyone sort of knows each other. So it's like, oh, just you'll be buying a pint, and then suddenly be, oh, Barney, you're Desmond's lad, aren't you? Just you come round the bar now, because I'm popping down. My third born, Susan, she's currently she's actually doing some butchering down at butchers, because she was on her way to the
she was off to milk the beer pig. So
he was going to milk the beer pig, but she got stuck there. So if you just pop round here, and tell you what, I'm going to go and be the butcher's dog for half an hour, because the butcher's dog's he's running the post office this morning, I think, because Clive's got shingles
Clive's got shingles, so all he can do today is he's got to be the speed bump at the entrance to the village. That's it.
He's being the speed bump today. So if you pop round here, and you know what we'll do? We'll muddle on through, because that's what we do. We muddle on through.
Yeah, he cracked it.
Yeah. is that how it works?
That's pretty much bang on, I'd say.
There's a muddling on through agenda in villages, isn't there? Whereas in the big cities, if I was to go to the butcher's and he was to tell me, can you pop round this side? And just, smash up those loins for me? Got a mixture of pig and haddock loins. We're mashing them up because we're making a surf and turf stew for the village fete.
Yeah. And then can you go and help Isabella with the threshing, please?
Yeah.
It's not going to happen.
It's not going to wash. Everyone's got their delineated sort of roles.
But Mike, for you, the hotel on the roundabout near the A Road.
Yeah, that was something different. So the village pub, that was very much the village pub. Same guys in every single night, same conversations every single night. You knew where you stood. Very little port serving of Guinness. That was a rarity. That would be quite exciting if that happened. And then I'd attempt to try and sort of put a ham-fisted shamrock in it. I'd fail. It's meant to be your real ales. Whereas your Forte Post House Hotel on the dual carriageway, I mean, sometimes you get people from Eastleigh. Right? So this is not just village life. You might have a family from Wickham. You know, I mean, the people who pass through there, including actually, there was a celebrity.
Oh,
and this relates, in fact, to the last Bean Lounge, which is how I knew a little bit of trivia that ended up in the Bean Lounge.
An Australian.
We had occasionally propping up the bar, the bloke who played Lou Carpenter from Neighbours,
Tom Oliver.
No way. Yeah. He'd pop over.
I think it's still Tom Oliver.
He'd pop over.
Old crag face. Is that a bit harsh?
Yeah, of course, yeah. It's just
a nice old man.
Direct insult to his physical appearance.
what was he doing there? Was that pre the Lou years, or was he very much at the height of his Lou powers?
No, this is peak Lou powers. It's peak Lou. It was desperately exciting.
According to his Wikipedia, he was born in Chandler's Ford, Hampshire.
Yeah, you see.
Does that mean anything to you?
Yeah, it's not a million miles away, see. So I think he had family quite nearby. And he'd he'd pop in and have a snifter. He didn't eat there. He'd been there before, so he knew not to do that.
I'm thinking the pub was a sort of casual option for, you know, Friday night on the booze, but Sunday night or something a bit more special. Is that where people go to the Trust House?
Yes, but never more than once. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. We never were. And they have a very, very disappointing experience.
And there was a little hotel there as well, some rooms, I suppose, for people who sort of, you know, needed to overnight between Southampton and Portsmouth, you know, which can take the best part of an hour.
Yeah.
And I assume Lou from Neighbours is leaving his key card, you know, with various women.
I don't.
Room 63, love.
I don't know.
Well, I imagine Lou's technique was, what you do is you get him out to the forte, right? I've got it all worked out. You have a nice night on the black stuff.
A nice hairy lasagna.
A nice hairy lasagna, or perhaps a hirsute carbonara. Or
round it off with a pubic trifle.
God. And by the time they've made their way through that, when later on I have to reveal my own horrifically hairy body, perhaps they're
inured to it. That's the thing. They're completely inured to it.
They're completely inured.
I'm just looking at his Wikipedia. There's a chance that he's entirely hairless because his background is incredible. He joined the Merchant Navy at 16. Whilst in the British Forces, he worked on the Pacific Nuclear Testing Base on Christmas Island.
Good grief.
This is all making sense now. he's radioactive, so he's completely hairless. And of course, because he's a hairless body in the same building as two very hairy men, he's attracting their hairs out of their bodies.
That's
towards the bar area.
Yes. Of course.
And on the way, they're settling on the lasagnas, the ham salads, the house trifles, etc.
Of course, anything in the path. You're right.
Yeah.
That makes perfect sense.
So you had to think of all those hours you spent running those old-fashioned Hoover things called?
A dust devil.
Running dust devils over tiramisu.
We called them dust devils, but they were just our sucking mouths. Yeah, but that's what we called them back in the day.
So you just give the food a quick lick.
Right, guys, Lou Carpenter is in today, so a lot of hair is going to be attracted towards his radioactive hairless body. So if you could just keep on top of it.
We're going to try and sit him next to the window and have the windows open, but it's -5 out there, and he's Australian. He's not going to like it.
Well, it turns out he's not Australian. I wonder if he was putting on the accent in Neighbours.
I think he'd been there for a long time, hadn't he?
Yeah.
And maybe he was doing some acting.
Yes. It's possible that his experiences on Christmas Island erased his memories.
Also, the baseline is that, or for all of us, is factory settings an Australian man? Is that would that happen to any of us?
That's what we reset to, yeah.
Yeah, if you use radio waves to completely reset yourself, you end up as Lou Carpenter from Neighbours.
Yeah. And I think that makes sense, doesn't it? Because it is nice to go on a beach. It is nice to eat a massive prawn. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? These are just basics. But, you know,
basic human urges.
The basic human urges. Do you think Lou Carpenter is a classic case of someone who, because, you know, we watched him on telly when we were kids, and he just seemed utterly ancient.
Yes.
He's the kind of person who you'll learn. And, of course, when he joined Neighbours, Lou Carpenter was 27. And it completely blows your mind.
It definitely will be that, yeah.
Yeah.
For anyone listening outside, I mean, if you're in the UK, you know who Lou Carpenter is.
Yeah, yeah.
If you're Australian, I assume you know who Lou Carpenter is.
Yeah.
But if you're from elsewhere, maybe mainland Europe or the USA, Lou Carpenter is kind of our...
He's our...
Rex Dallas, what are they called, the characters from...
PJ...
Who shot JR?
PJ Stetson. Yeah, JR.
Yeah.
JR Ewing. Yeah, yeah, I'd say he's our JR Ewing.
Billy Bob Jr. Alamo. Yeah, it's probably
he was a big character in an Australian soap opera that, for some reason, British school children were obsessed with throughout the sort of 80s and 90s, was it?
It was then cancelled, and now it's coming back.
So it is.
Just in time for Lou Carpenter's 36th birthday.
Let's turn on the bean machine.
Turn on the bean machine.
So this week's topic, as sent in by Gemma in Bromley.
Thanks, Gemma.
Is ice cream.
Oh.
Okay, Mike, coming to you first.
Yeah.
It's a sunny day.
Yeah.
You're out, maybe with your family at the beach. It's a nice day. Mm-hmm. Glad to be alive. You hear the jingling of an ice cream. Ding, 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 ding.
To which we all have a strongly inbuilt Pavlovian response. Our mouths start watering. We're ready to go.
Which, for me, is blood-curdling horror that it's going to be a sort of an evil clown van.
Mm-hmm.
Isn't it? It's a mixture of that's either really lovely experience for everyone, ice cream, kids will have a nice time, or it's a blood-curdling call of the evil clown van.
You're going to have to finish your day going to battle in the bowels of hell via the town sewers.
Yes. Yeah.
With someone sticking other. Your flake in you.
You are the sprinkles. Oh, no, it's the evil van.
You put your hands in your pocket, Mike. There's a crisp £10 note in there. Mm-hmm. And you wander up to the ice cream van.
Yeah.
What are you having?
Mint chocolate chip.
Oh, 80s.
Yeah,
so 80s.
Mint chocolate chip.
So 80s. Mint chop chip.
Either you're sort of you're strolling mint chop chip down the seafront promenade, or you go all in. Visiting my grandmother in Kenfig Hill in South Wales, and we go down to Porthcawl over summer's day to Fulgoni's, which did a very, very fine
Fulgoni's.
Kind of banana sundae, that kind of thing.
Oh.
You know, the absolute works.
The works.
Lovely.
Yeah.
Instead of a flake, it's a pack of cigarettes shoved in it, isn't it? Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. It's a pack of unfiltered Woodbines.
Served in a bowl of cockles.
And the whole thing, you put it in a conical, a sort of conical shape of made out of an old tabloid newspaper, isn't it?
Yeah.
And you just put the whole
thing. It's plunged down your throat. Yeah, yeah.
You plunge it down your throat.
a local sort of recently prize winning welterweight at amateur level.
Yeah.
Just wangs it down.
Yeah. And because of the shape of the conical thing that's in your mouth, if a seagull, which often will decides to chase those cockles down your throat.
That's your protein, isn't it?
You've got your protein.
In he goes.
And obviously because it's conical shaped, it won't be able to get back out.
Yeah, a diving seagull, when it's in dive formation, is very easily swallowed, actually.
That's
even by an eight-year-old boy.
Yeah. And of course, that's why if you are using a public toilet in that part of the country, it's always worth having a quick look down the bowl, because you might find yourself a nice little seagull beak. Might need
add it to your necklace.
Yeah.
Warm, happy memories.
Okay, so Henry, what's your ultimate ice cream experience then?
Well, I've got a few. One is I do like on a summer's day, popping down my local garage to spend between £4 and £7
on one of their latest experimental ice creams, such as a choc ice.
With a boiled egg run through it. Just when I'm down there, because normally I'll just be buying, you know, a mini pack of supplemental bog roll or a Sunday paper. But when I'm in there, I will quite often go over to the Magnum fridge. They've got their own Magnum fridge.
It's just that garage and Ben, isn't it? I think are the only places where you can find
just that garage and Ben
Magnum fridge
that have one. And I'll get myself a Magnum. I will partly inspired by Ben actually, just because Ben does put out a lot of social media content around Magnums, don't you?
He's the only completely voluntary brand ambassador for a major worldwide brand that exists.
He is a completely non-profit influencer on behalf of
Procter & Gamble. Nobody does actually make them.
And you refuse their money, don't you? They've offered you huge amounts, but for you, it's a matter of principle. That
there's a mega yacht sitting in Cardiff Bay just doing nothing. Doesn't want it.
But I always go for the classic Magnum. You know what? I think Magnum have pulled off an absolute. There's a genius bit of marketing how they sort of market the product. I mean, it's absolutely suckered in
It's a choc ice on a stick.
A pretty intelligent guy in the form of Ben Partridge here. Yeah, he's a pretty discerning guy. You know, he knows it is absolutely hook line. I mean, he's deep. He's in so deep. He's got no idea what's going on, does he, with Magnums? Mm-hmm. But yeah, exactly, Mike. It's choc ice on a stick. They've called it Magnum.
Mm-hmm.
So they've given it that deluxe, you know.
It's premium, yeah.
They've given it premium, premium sort of labelling. There's a sort of golden platinum coloured wrappers.
Yeah, there's a Willy Wonka touch. Yeah, touch of magic.
The Willy Wonka touch. The wrappers, when they're because they're in the freezer and they're cold, the wrappers kind of feel like gold leaf. They just feel like an incredibly expensive deluxe thing.
Yes.
They've got names like millionaire and billionaire, haven't they?
I think you're referring to the double gold caramel billionaire.
They've got names like double gold caramel billionaire.
It's gilding the lily, isn't it?
It really is. Double gold.
The strawberry oligarch.
Yeah, no, it's got totally oligarch sort of vibe. So you do feel you're really spoiling yourself. But really, you're not. It's a choc ice on a slightly wider than you'd expect stick. Mm. It's a choc ice on a stick, the shape of one of those wooden forks you get for fish and chips.
Do you know what I think it is for me? I think I've worked out that basically when I was a kid, you know, the ice cream van would arrive. Mm-hmm. I was never allowed the Magnum because the Magnum was top of the pops. Yeah. It was often over a pound at the time, which was, you know. Yeah. So I'd be getting your Fab Lolly, your Twister, your Feast, a Mini Milk.
And obviously the local billionaire's son, he would get the Magnum, wouldn't he, every time? Yeah.
And he wouldn't even finish it half the time, would he?
He'd throw it into the mouth of his nanny. And I think it was a moment quite early on in adulthood when I realised I could just buy one of these. Now even when I was a student, I didn't have any money. I could still afford. I could have one every day, basically, and it wouldn't.
Yeah,
I could do it.
Yeah,
I actually remember, like, being a student, one of the first weeks of kind of being an adult, really, and just going to Tesco and buying loads of choc ices and being like,
stop me,
stop me. I'm a sovereign individual.
My dad said this was fine, by the way. Couldn't help splitting that out at the counter.
And that remains,
I think I have the same thing, actually, Ben, when I get a Magnum, because I do love to get a Magnum. I do feel like a bit of a billionaire. Anyway, I do feel a bit special. And
you're buying a lifestyle.
I'm buying a lifestyle. And I do have that moment where I take off the deluxe wrapper, which makes that crinkly sound, which I think is probably the same sound as gold makes. And then when I bite into it, I really try and experience the thing you see in the ads. You know, I really try and...
Clunk.
The clunk, clunk. And that is, by the way, that's the exact same sound that the top-end BMW doors make when you open and close them, isn't it? It's that sort of...
Onto your forearm and it breaks your ulna. Yeah.
It's that deluxe clunk of having your arm severed by a BMW door. Isn't it? Where it almost doesn't matter.
Which is a sound few of us can dare to dream of hearing in our lifetimes.
Yeah. But rather than, you know, the sound of like eating a feast, what sound is that? It's sort of
Or just getting the end of your finger trapped in the boot door of a Nissan Micra.
Exactly.
That's not gonna do it.
Squelch.
Yeah. But quite often what I'll find is you have to wait for the Magnum to get a bit warm. Because if you go straight in for the bite, you're like, oh, it's almost a bit chewy. It's not very nice. It's not making any clunk. There's no deluxe feeling. It's almost like I'm chewing. It's almost like I'm eating a bloody choc ice here. I mean, if it wasn't on a stick, I think obviously it could have been a stuck choc ice. But it's not. It's basically a Ferrari. It's a small, edible. It's basically an edible Ferrari. That's what it is. But then if you just let it warm up a little bit in the sun, then you can actually get the clunk.
Yeah, and you're also waiting to sort of turn a few heads in that time as well. You're waiting for people to notice.
Oh, yeah. And you get some jealous. Obviously, you get some jealous people.
Who is he?
You'll get some jealous people going, oh, wanker. You're showing a wanker. Some guy eating a feast. Yeah. And then you look down.
Who do you think you are?
Yeah. Think you're different from me? You think you're special just because I'm eating a Zoom? And of course, and then sometimes you're. Bah, 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 because someone's trying to break into your Magnum and the alarm goes off. No, then what happens is you look down. So you're feeling. You let the sun warm it up a bit. You bite into it. You feel the clunk, clunk, the deluxe. Clunk, clunk.
It yields.
It finally
yields.
It resists. Resists, resists, clunk, clunk, yields.
Yeah.
And you look down, and effectively 40% of your Ferrari is on your trousers and shoes. Because it is impossible to get it all in your gob, isn't it? How do you deal with that, Ben?
Just experience.
Really?
Yeah.
I take a sort of silver wine bucket with me, and I eat it over that.
Yeah,
so catch the bits.
It's a way of doing it.
Hmm.
But other ice cream experiences I have is, I don't know why this is. There's some economic reason for this, but one of the only sort of things that thrive in the high street is ice cream shops, isn't it? There's loads of them.
Yes.
It's cafes,
right.
Ice cream shops, and estate agents for some reason. I don't know why. What?
Yes, and those businesses have got very similar names, but they all look exactly the same.
Yeah, Fandangos.
There's one called called Creams.
There's Chimbandis. Bandando.
Dreams.
Lambandi. Oh.
Lambandi, of course.
In Chiswick, there's a kind of old Italian one that's been there forever called Fanjandes or something. And they get queued up. They get queued up in the summer.
Really?
But they get massively queued up. Mm. I mean, ice cream, presumably, like, Mike, a day is sort of, on a holiday, I imagine, sort of structured around ice cream, isn't it? I know from my own nephews and nieces that ice cream is a sort of incentive that's used to get through the day, that it's sort of, it's quite an important sort of...
Or as a threat to withdraw.
Yeah, ice cream. Yeah, exactly.
Privileges.
Almost. Or a threat to fully encase them in ice cream. Yeah, you have to have too much ice cream.
Usually empty threats, and everyone knows that.
Yeah.
But, you know.
Yeah.
Because
yeah.
You want an ice cream as much as they do.
Exactly. That's a they understand that implicitly from day dot. Yeah.
Everyone's in it for the ice cream, pretty much. Yeah. It's the cold, tasty glue that holds families together, in a way.
And why walls haven't run with that, I don't know.
But quickly, before we carry on, I mean, I've just quickly had an idea which I think might be my first billion.
Oh, okay.
Your first double billion.
My first double billion. I was just thinking about the experience of going to an ice cream parlour, which does involve a lot of queuing, doesn't it? You queue, you look at someone's dog for a bit.
Mm-hmm.
You queue. You get to towards the front, and someone just doesn't know what to have because there's so many options. Someone's being really annoying. Then got
Henry. Just because I don't want you to copyright this idea, because I've had the same idea as you. I've already posted it to myself.
You haven't. That was from me. I posted it to both of you as if it was from you, as a double bluff, to double check.
Okay, here we go. It's an ice cream parlour, but with different cured meats. There we go.
That is mine, Ben. You are not having Henry Pidgeot's frozen meat di salami. You're not having that. It's mine. Frozen meat dreams. That's mine. You're not having that.
And do you want that in a waffle cone or in a fistful of mints?
Perfect, Mike. Perfect.
Stretch, you can eat steak tartare, but what's even rawer than fresh? Frozen. That's right. A selection of different thicknesses and fat levels of frozen beef minces.
This was slaughtered when frozen. To lock in the freshness.
You got your lamb minces, you got your beef minces, you got your chicken minces, introducing your turkey minces. Again, different fat levels and different coarsenesses of meat grain.
So I'm just going to go with one ball of chocolate, raspberry ripple, and then some venison heart, please.
Okay. And you know what? Because I'm in a good mood today and you gave me a lovely smile, I'm going to give you a free lamb's eyeball on top. All right, have a nice day. Yeah. So here's my idea, right? So you get to the front, and there's too many options. Raspberry and strawberry. I mean, is there really a difference there? Sorbet, do you want to go down Sorbet Road? Is sorbet really an ice cream, or is it just like when you're defrosting your fridge and some old cherries have got stuck? Do you know what I mean? Like, is that an ice cream? You've got vegan ones. You've got too many options. You've got all the different, how many balls to have? Conical cone, bigger cone, waffle cone, bowl, spoon, bowl sizes, too many, right? It is really annoying. It takes ages. So why not do the same thing that Pret-a-Manger did with sandwiches?
Put raw onions in them.
They secretly put mayo, loads of mayo in all of them. Don't tell anyone. No. encase the ice cream in two slices of wholemeal bread. No. No, have the ice cream on racks on the walls.
Pret a headache.
So instead of going to the front, you've got all the ice creams lined up on the sides, like pret-a-manger sandwiches.
Mm. Well, so ready scooped.
Yeah, ready scooped. Sorry, that's a good name. Ready scooped. Ready scooped. So you go in and you look, and there's just freezers on the walls, and you've got an ice cream there with the chocolate cone. You've got
Hang on, who owns the idea to the title Ready Scooped?
Well, I think I heard it first. Because Ben said it, but I heard it and then had the idea for it. I can trace it back to the exact moment I had the idea, was when I heard it, whereas Ben can't prove that he actually heard it. He was saying it at the time, so who knows? I'm going to take Ready Scooped. It's actually not a bad idea.
Well, Henry, thank you for coming in. I'm going to say, I'm out.
Of my mind with how much money I'm going to put into this, because I love it.
I think it sounds horrifying. It being scooped in front of you is part of the experience, I'm afraid. You're not onto a winner there.
I don't think the scooping's that. Is the scooping really part of the experience? I think it's quite distressing watching the scooping.
You want to pare it down, Henry. You don't even want any employees in there. You don't, like a sort of just
touchscreen.
Touchscreen, you get out of a small locked cubicle.
Keep it touchscreen, locked cubicle. I even think touchscreen is too intimate because you're touching something, a screen. We're going to try and work a way around that.
Well, good luck. It's a bleak future, I think, for ice cream, but it's a future, but it's
an efficient one. I've just thought of another way I like to enjoy ice cream, though, very quickly.
Mm. Yep.
Which is what the Italians call passaggiata.
Passaggiata. Go on, edify.
I think that's what it's called.
What are we talking?
Basically,
is that a mixture of ice cream and passata?
Exactly. It's a garlicky, tomatoey, rich ice cream experience. No, it's when you I think what it is when you have a lovely Italian meal in a lovely little crumbling old beautiful Italian town.
Mm. Aging population. Big economic problems.
Mm-hmm. Rife with all kinds of horrible criminality.
Decent attendance at mass on Sunday though.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
And obviously constant funerals.
Mm-hmm.
and then you have a little walk around the town eating an ice cream. You see, it's called passaggiata, I think. So you walk up and down, essentially.
It's kind of like a promenading thing.
It's a promenading thing, but with an ice cream in hand, which you'd have got from a little Italian ice cream place.
So I do a sort of version of that, but instead of promenading around a crumbling Italian town,
mm-hmm.
I'm sat on the sofa watching The Apprentice.
Yeah.
I call it apprenticiadia. Sat on my assiadia.
Very romantic though, isn't it?
I think that could catch on, Ben.
And then I drop the slightly sticky stick of the Magnum mm-hmm. onto my chest mm-hmm. where it adheres to the T-shirt mm-hmm. and I'm reminded of it only later on when I get up and brush my teeth and it's still stuck to my T-shirt.
Stanley Tucci does a very similar thing most weeknights. Yeah.
Is that ice cream?
I think that is, yeah.
Mm. I think that's ice cream.
What a substance.
It's a great substance. Yeah.
It's man's crowning glory.
Mm-hmm. It really is.
Thank you. Thank you, ice cream.
Thank you, ice cream. Yeah. And thank you, Gemma of Bromley.
Time to read your emails.
When you send an email, you must give thanks to the postmasters that came before.
Good morning, postmaster. Anything for me?
Just some old shit.
When you send an email, this represents progress. Like a robot shoeing a horse.
Give me your horse.
My beautiful horse.
We've had an email from our old friend, Jazz the Polar Scientist.
Ooh, in relation to the Arctic episode.
Indeed. She writes, hello, Beans.
Hello.
Hi, Jazz.
Henry asked for a method to remember which is which of the Arctic and the Antarctic.
Oh, yes. Yes, please. Now,
you may remember that Mike gave you quite a good way of thinking about it.
He did.
Can you remember it?
Yeah. Antarctic is on the bottom because you imagine an ant there. Ants famously can hold stuff on their backs. It's surprisingly large. So you imagine an ant holding the whole world. So Antarctic's on the bottom. South Pole, Antarctic, North Pole, Arctic.
I think you've helped thousands, Mike.
I couldn't retire.
Anyway, Jazz.
Also, pens write down. So penguins are on the downmost one, the South Pole, because pens write down.
But you can write someone up or write something up.
Yeah, that's true. All right, that's work in progress, that one.
You can also bear down on someone, but the bears are on the North Pole at the top.
That's true.
Yeah, but you could also bear something, like the world on your shoulders, which would be wrong. Be the wrong
yeah,
way
so it's not easy, is it?
It's
not easy.
Well, Jazz has got away.
All right.
Arctic comes from the Greek arctos, meaning bear.
There we go. First principle stuff. Great. There we go.
Good.
For our classically educated listeners.
This is because the star constellation of the Great Bear, brackets Ursa Major, points north.
And also looks like a sort of decent pan. Isn't it? Looks like a sort of
quite a deep one. Yeah,
quite a deep pan you might get in John Lewis.
Is it the bear that looks like a pan?
Yeah,
yeah.
I thought it was the plough that looks like a pan. Or is the plough sure the same as the bear?
Uh oh, we're in big trouble already.
All I'm going to say is Orion's belt, and leave it at that.
Because of course, thousands of years ago, people looked up at the sky, saw three stars in a row, and thought belt, obvious belt.
Because he always used to keep a saucepan dangling off his belt as well, didn't he?
That's right.
Well, it's a useful thing to carry on. It's a weapon. It's a kitchen utensil.
It's a hat.
Keep your shopping in it.
Ben, the reason it's Orion's belt is because, you laugh, but the stars obviously represent the holes in the belt buckle. And one of the reasons, the holes in the belt.
Right.
Yeah, which the buckle goes into. And obviously one of the reasons that we know the universe is expanding, a bit like many of us, especially around about after Christmas time, is
so do you think eventually that Orion will have to put another hole in the belt?
That's what they're saying. Yeah,
yeah.
That's what we're waiting for. It may take the form of a white dwarf. May take the form of a.
That's the definitive proof then that the universe is expanding. We know then. Yeah
exactly.
Got it.
But I tell you what, if you think it's very hard getting someone to put a hole in a belt just walking around your average town centre, try that on a cosmic scale. It's not easy.
As they always say, there's no Timpsons in space. Jazz writes, so the Arctic is the North Polar region and the Antarctic, meaning anti-bear, is the south. This works well because also there are bears living in the Arctic and there are no bears in the Antarctic. So the Arctic is truly bear land and the Arctic is anti-bear land.
Okay.
Can I say that was absolutely wonderful. Thanks very much. I now no longer know which one is the North or South Pole. But thanks very much. No, I did. Obviously, North Pole is North because we've got Never Eat Shredded Wheat, which is
what North stands for.
Which is what North stands for. So she's saying Arctic comes from the Greek arctos, meaning bear.
Yes.
Not to be confused with Ursa.
Okay.
Which is the Latin for belt. Okay, two emails to finish. One.
Okay.
I'm going to forward this to you. I don't know how well this will come across. Stuart emails, Dear Beans, I've attached a small 9-second video clip from my dash cam of a near miss.
Mm-hmm.
Please play with the volume on as you may catch the possible reason for my distraction.
Oh, no.
Can you see if I can catch the bouquet of turds?
Well, you don't want those to be your last words, do you? last words you hear. So he was driving along, he was listening to Three Bean Salad podcast. I said something about catching a bouquet of turds, which I'm not proud of, listening back. And then what happened?
I mean, he nearly got sort of poleaxed, pretty much, didn't he?
By what? I didn't really see what happened.
Side chanted. There's a guy pulling out of a garage.
There's a car pulling out of a petrol station who he very... very nearly misses or nearly hits.
Oh, Lord.
I mean, the only worse thing than crashing after hearing Henry saying, I'm going to catch the bouquet of turds is when you're cut out of the car by a fire, you know, fireman.
and your car stereo is stuck on bouquet of turds, bouquet of turds, bouquet of turds, and you've been there for 2.5 hours listening to bouquet of turds.
And you know that's going to have to be read out at the inquest.
In real time, isn't it? Over and over again. And you're just saying to the fireman, just please finish me off, please. You've got a huge mega drill in your hand. Well, just tell people your arm slipped, please.
Anna Marie emails.
Mm-hmm.
Hello, Anna Marie. I know Anna Marie. Just, you know.
Who's Anna Marie?
You know Anna Marie, did you say?
I know Anna Marie. She lives in Cardiff.
Yeah.
Dear Beans, after much positive PR from my husband Tim and my good friends Leia and Ian, I made it a New Year's resolution to get into your podcast. And I've just listened to the second episode, brackets, yep, it's going well so far, entitled Lizards. Imagine my surprise at realising you guys are the masterminds behind the recently announced Emily Maitlis film.
Oh, they're doing the they're making a film of the interview.
Oh, that's
the Prince Andrew interview, aren't they?
Yes. And I think at the time we theorised that there could be a series of films called The Maitlis Chronicles.
That's right. It was more her as an international sort of spy and assassin, though, wasn't it?
Congratulations on getting your ambitious project greenlit and for securing none other than Gillian Anderson in the leading role.
Gillian Anderson is playing Prince Andrew.
Looking forward to the announcement of Anthony Hopkins as the Russian scientist Pope who's controlling robot Maitlis. I can't wait to hear my email being read out in March 2030 when I get to your current episode, when I assume you've now completed your evolution into crabs. Big love, Anne-Marie. Thank yes. You. So they have stolen our idea.
Who's playing Prince Andrew? Do we know?
I don't know, actually. It's a bit of a poison chalice, isn't it, of a role?
Well, it's one of those gambles you make, which is this is either poison chalice, I become toxic for the rest, you know, my career's over, or Oscars, Golden Globes, gongs, Emmys.
It'll be Sheen, you know what I mean? Won't it? It's usually Sheen.
It'll often be Sheen.
Is it Sheen? Or is it a job for
Wozniak?
The big break.
You'd have to flesh colour your moustache, right? Because you're not allowed to remove that now for insurance reasons.
Too dangerous.
Just colour it in green. And
Green snood on it.
You green snood it.
You'd have to learn how to not sweat.
But again, I'll swallow something that dyes my sweat green, and then again they can just
just nip it out in post, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah.
How do you make a film of a TV? So essentially, it'll be. The film of a TV show, it'll be like the TV show, but without the real people playing them, but in widescreen, is it? Imagine if someone filmed this TV show. That's what we do in this groundbreaking new film.
The film Frost Nixon's quite good.
Okay.
Similar vibe.
Yeah, obviously it'll be behind the scenes. It'll be all about how Prince Andrew just refused all the advice to not do it. To be him going, no, 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 and eating Pizza Express pizzas. No, no, I'm halfway through a Romana here. I said no, no, no. Doughballs, please. Yes to Doughballs. No. Isn't it? He refused to not do it.
And then we see Maitlis turning down some Doughballs before the interview, and you know that she's serious.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Looks like your dough's cooked, Andrew.
Your claims are baseless, Andrew. Romana baseless.
You're in trouble, Andrew. Deep Chicago style deep dish trouble.
Deep. There is a rumour that Mike's never been to Pizza Express, which I know is not true. But it is a rumour that's out there, isn't it? Is it?
It got a reaction, didn't it? Yeah.
I think in jest you might have mentioned that you said you'd never been to Pizza Express. This led to the person who deals with our advertising, shout out to Maddie, contacting us. And I think imagining that we could do some kind of advertising campaign where Mike tries a Pizza Express for the first time.
Mm. And it perhaps would go viral, like a video of a post-operative baby hearing for the first time. A real tearjerker.
Just Mike bursts into tears the second the pizza goes in.
For the first time, I'm discovering my sense of oregano. Hello. I'm seeing the whole world through oregano nose glasses. Or is that oregano?
It's time to pay Ferryman. Patreon.com/3beansalad.
Thank you to everyone who signed up on our Patreon.
Yes, thank you.
Thanks, everyone.
If you're interested in more chat and ad-free episodes, go to patreon.com/3beansalad. And if you sign up at the Sean Bean tier, you get a shout-out in the Sean Bean Lounge, where Mike was last night.
It certainly was. Because, of course, last night was the
annual indoor, entirely shaved celebrity race.
Thank you, Ben. Yes, that's correct. And here's my report.
It was leave your Macassar oil at the door last night at the Sean Bean Lounge as competitors gathered for the annual indoor entirely shaved celebrity race. The starting blocks were a hive of last-minute activity as the teams attempted to make their celebrities as frictionless as varnished eels. Harriet Franks, Eel Becca Brooke, and Joel Carriageway made the decision to shave John Travolta against the grain, which made him angry but competitive. Peter Pritchard and not-so-old Greg, ever with an eye on attention to detail, attempted to pluck David Hasselhoff hairless but were barely halfway through the non-dominant armpit when the starter pistol fired. Olivia M., Quentin Weed, and Patrick O'Connell's team fell foul of a communications failure, leading to task duplication and then triplication, leading to Daniel Day-Lewis being overwaxed literally to the bone. Gareth Walsh asked for George Clooney to attend pre-shaven, and Clooney was accommodating, though didn't appear to understand A, the nature of the event, or B, that en route to the event he was permitted to wear clothes. All competing celebrities were then passed through Ollie and Caroline's hair-detecting zip-fastener labyrinth. Nicole Kidman and Jason Statham were both snagged by stragglers and disqualified, causing great disappointment to Matt Lilly and George Randall, respectively. Also disappointed was Simon Mitchell, who, despite erring on the side of caution by turning up with both a celebrity substitute and a substitute for the substitute, found that Denzel Washington wouldn't be shaved, Keith Richards couldn't be shaved, and Dolly Parton shouldn't be shaved. At last, the glabrous A-listers were off, as hairless as freshly sanded clogs, sprinting over 80 yards of painfully hot towels. And boy oh boy could those celebs shift it, but none of them could cut through the air at the speed of Nigel Havers, who, thanks to Ross McDermott and Sarah subjecting him to national grid-level electrolysis, was as smooth as the handle of a John Lewis whisk. They took home the gold, plus enough celebrity hair to fill 3.5 decent floor cushions. Thanks all.
Okay, and before we go, we're doing a live show.
We are as well.
Very exciting. Very exciting news.
We're doing the Machynlleth Comedy Festival in Mid Wales on the 30th of April at midday, which I've always said is comedy time.
It really is, isn't it? When those two, that minute hand and that hour hand start a-clapping, don't they? They clap together.
You think that you're starting to think about lunch. That's not actually what
you're not.
About. It's a false signal.
You're not.
You're thinking about is
that's
the,
what you think, yeah.
The raw urge for some vaguely comedic lukewarm banter delivered live.
And that rumbling in your tummy, that's not the rumble of hunger, is it? No. That's the rumble of anticipation of belly laughs.
It's taking place in a deconsecrated church.
That's right.
Which feels appropriate.
Which is the only place we felt that we'd be wholly safe from Spurbs. We know that he can't cross the threshold into religious buildings.
Yeah. Unless one of you invites him in.
Yes.
Yeah. So please.
But then we're not sure if that counts if it's deconsecrated or not. We might have to reconsecrate it.
That's right. Well, we're going to do a live reconsecration, aren't we? So at some point in the show, we're going to live reconsecrate it for about 15 minutes. So if you want to get married or funeraled, christened,
or simply confirmed,
or actually if you want to desecrate a holy building, no matter which angle you're coming at it from, you'll have an opportunity. You'll have a reconsecration window where you can.
If you want to stop a wedding, that might be possible.
Oh, that's a bit of fun, isn't it?
Yeah,
take that off your bucket list. But yeah, it's going to be good.
Come on down.
Machynlleth Comedy Festival is it's one of the best, basically, isn't it? One of the best.
Yeah. Easy peasy.
Really good comedy festival. I mean, everything on is good, basically, so you'll have a nice time. Also, great part of the world. But let me just put it this way. You could, I think, within 20 minutes of leaving the show, be looking, with the caveat, through binoculars at an osprey.
Because we'll be releasing an osprey, won't we? Just
Yeah, we're reintroducing the wolves now ahead of time.
Yeah, so they're already at large. The wolves are at large. The osprey will get released as part of the denouement of the show.
Yeah. And who will be triumphant? The wolves or the osprey? Or will it be the third mystery beast?
Yeah.
Which we will not reveal until the end of the show. But let's put it this way. It's horned.
Yeah.
But it isn't supposed to be. So yeah, come and check that out. Hopefully we'll see you there.
I'll put a link to tickets in the show description.
Mm.
All right, that's the podcast. But to play us out, a version of our theme tune by one of the listeners. And often I will give you a choice as to which one we want to do, but I've chosen this week.
Okay.
This is from Chris Marsh. He says, I've still got about 50 episodes of the podcast to catch up on, so I hope this is still a thing.
It is still a thing. Yep.
Being regretfully late to the Three Bean Party, I'm currently binging my way through all of your work. Having just got to the episodes where listeners are starting to send in theme tunes, and with Henry's visionary but ill-fated Blade Runner meets Swan experience fresh in my memory, I felt compelled to send you my Vangelis-inspired creation.
I think that's Vangelis, by the way.
Get out of town. Is it?
I think so. I don't know, but I think it's Vangelis. I'm pretty sure it's Vangelis.
Well, he's dead now, isn't he? He's with the Angles.
Nicely done, Ben.
What does that mean? I don't get that.
He's chucked a hard G in Angels.
Oh, you clever little sod.
He is, isn't he? At the end of the recording, still got...
Oh.
Still ready, rough and still ready with a little bit of wordplay.
Touché.
Mm.
Hats off.
Underestimate me at your peril, Mr. Packer.
Hats off. But by the way, can I say...
Yeah.
That's added some grease to my elbow for later on, because... Ben and I have a relationship, isn't it, where we're...
Rather than some Drees.
Right. I mean.
Thank you, Mike.
Oh, God.
What are we going for?
Basically, I don't really understand this G thing. I can't do it. It's one of those ones which only you two can do, and I can't really get my head around it. I can't do it. But like, we're friends, but very much nemesis as well, aren't we, me and Ben? So later on, because we play chess against each other, don't we? So, in a kind of bishop to pawn 4 way we write to each other, don't we? You'll just send me a letter and it'll just say pawn to bishop 5.
Yours sincerely, Benjamin.
And I'll go to my chessboard and I'll look at it and I'll be, ah, damn him, and I'll cast all the pieces under the floor. And then I'll write you a letter saying, pieces to the floor 9, you prick. Yours, Honjamin. Anyway, so I don't really know what I'm talking about. Right.
Do you mean Hongamin?
Oh, God. I can't do this one. I don't understand it.
Anyway, thank you, Chris, for this wonderful theme.
Yes, thank you.
And thank you all for listening.
Thanks, Chris.
See you next time.
Bye.
Bye.